Y'all ready? Y'all ready?
Yeah.
Let's go. Come on.
Tiger Rag Radio is on the air.
Let's crank this thing up.
We're statewide breaking down the latest happenings with LSU Athletics.
This is us.
Hear from the coaches.
Here at Tiger Stadium on Saturday night, there is nothing like it.
The players.
We're having fun and we're working, baby. That's it, baby.
The recruits.
Show some passion and some heart.
And those who cover the Fighting Tigers of LSU and the SEC.
LSU is the best job in football.
It's 2 hours of nonstop LSU talk.
What a privilege. I mean, you get to represent LSU.
Tiger Rag Radio is brought to you by Cummins. Cummins creates power solutions that the world depends on. Louisiana Beef Industry Council. Boudreaux's Electrical Services. Sunshine Quality Solutions. Super Chevy Dealers. And Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. Get ready to talk Tigers with producer Andre Champagne and our host, Todd Horn, Jeff Palermo, and Glenn Gildo.
Players that are better people than they are players.
This is Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Hello and welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio. This is Glenn Gildo with Todd Horn and Andre Champagne. We're going to continue our conversation about Matt McMahon later on in the show, but right now we're switching over to baseball, and we're joined by the natural, as he was often called at LSU, Todd Walker. Todd, how are you?
Glenn, I'm great, man. You've been around a long time, and you were covering us 30 years ago, dude. I mean, this is in your blood, right?
Too long, man, too long. But speaking of that, I was trying to remember, because I covered your whole career at LSU, and I don't really remember you having a hitting slump except for the one you had briefly in Omaha that you busted out of big time with the grand slam against Texas A&M. But what do you think of this team-wide slump, or most of the team, that LSU is in, and how were you able to avoid slumps?
First of all, I couldn't sleep when I didn't get a hit, which is normal. Now I look back on baseball, I wish somebody would have told me, look, the best of the best go through slumps. And slump doesn't necessarily mean you're striking out all the time. I mean, you can hit balls all over the ballpark, and you know, you go through times when they're just right at people. And then you have this bad luck streak. In the big leagues, you know, you can go 0 for 20, 0 for 25, and, you know, and still be a good hitter. But I never thought that way. So I remember, I want to say I was 0 for 5, 0 for 4 against UNO. And me and Mike Neal went back to the box, and we turned the lights on, and we hit all night. I remember the sun coming up, man. My hands were bleeding. You know, that type of stuff. So I couldn't deal with it. And I'm sure, like, there is no grinder. There's no bigger grinder in that clubhouse right now than Jay Johnson, right? But he can't play. There's only 200-300 hitters in this group right now, which, you know, I'm going to speak out of both sides of my mouth. It's still baseball. It's very difficult. My son always, you know, says that, you know, if they throw 96, they're a good pitcher. But if they throw 86, they're not. And that he equates velocity to whether they're good or not. So they're facing a lot of guys that they're, you know, that couldn't make it in the SEC, yet they're not getting hits. And that's a little concerning. But at the same time, his baseball, and it's tough. And I think a lot of times I went out there going, man, if I'm playing, you know, Dartmouth or High Point, you know, or somebody like that, I feel like I gotta get 5 hits today. And you end up, you know, like running yourself in the ground. And so I think there's a little bit of that going on. Clearly, Jake Brown has been great. I'm not overly concerned about it because it's a talented group, you know, 1 through 9. Like, they really don't have, you know, a bad hitter. And, you know, they're going to feed off each other. In addition, you know, when I think hitters, I look to the walk, strikeout. You know, can they handle the bat? Are they handling good approaches? And there's a lot of guys that have at least – as many walks and hit by pitches, you know, free passes, than they do strikeouts. And that tells me that's a sign of a good hitter. And there's a lot of those guys in this lineup. So it's just a matter of time for the balls start falling around. I'm not overly concerned with it. But again, if you look at the numbers after, you know, what is it, 17, 18 games of non-conference play, and you only got two guys that are above 300, that, you know, that would be a little cause for concern.
Todd, you mentioned that Jay is a grinder, and he's probably, you know, not able to sleep at night just like you were whenever you were playing. But, you know, like you said, he's not in the box himself, and he said that. He said, I'm not in the box, and that's obvious. But what can he do from a coaching perspective, and what is he doing from a coaching perspective? Because he's like an offensive coordinator from football and baseball. So what is he doing to try and walk them through this slump, so to speak?
Gosh, that's such a great question because it's so hard to answer. You can't go, all right, let's go to the cage for 5 hours and work it out. That's not the way it works. In fact, if anything, it goes in the reverse direction. At some point, you became a psychologist. Like, those guys are there for a reason. They all were the best players on their high school team. Some have been at LSU, Stephen Milam. He's got the at-bats in the SEC. At some point, Stephen Milam has to understand that he doesn't have to carry the team. A new guy like Dardar has to understand that he just has to do his job, take the walks. You don't have to be big. You know, just do what you are capable of doing. A lot of times in baseball, it's patience. And it's going 3, 4, 5 games without getting a hit. But you're going deep in counts. You're helping the guys behind you. You're hitting balls hard, even though you might be out. You're doing your job, hitting the ground ball to the right side with a guy on second, nobody out, moving them over, that type of thing. Getting them in from third with less than 2 outs instead of striking out. There's certain things you can do, you know, that make a difference that doesn't necessarily reflect on your batting average. And I think you're seeing a little bit of that. But for Jay, he's got to be pulling his hair out because, again, what he'd like to do is probably like Bertman used to do us, you know, make us run 18 miles in the morning, you know. And back when I played, it was more of a punishment thing. Now, and we understand that doesn't work. I think now he just tinkers with the lineup, see what works. Although the bell's ringing now, you got to go now. It's SEC time. You've seen him move guys around in the lineup. Ultimately, you become a psychologist. Some of the best hitting coaches I ever had in the big leagues really didn't talk about technique. They just filled your head full of positive thoughts. You're the best. You're great. You know, you can do this. And I think at this point, that's the most important thing, is making the kids believe in themselves and understand who they play for, which is LSU, you know, 2-time national champion in the last 3 years. But that same message is being said when they've lost the last 4 out of 5, which is you can't just put on the uniform and walk out there and have people lie down. I mean, they're going to fight you probably harder than anybody else.
Talking to Todd Walker, former LSU national champion in the 1993 season, went to Omaha twice in the LSU Hall of Fame, long Major League Baseball career, and is a baseball analyst for SEC Network. What game are you at this weekend, Todd?
LSU Vandy.
Are you broadcasting the LSU Vandy game this weekend?
No, I don't have anything until March 29th. I got Ole Miss and Mississippi State. I thought you were asking me about the matchup.
Oh, I got you. How do you see this LSU Vanderbilt series coming up this weekend?
Well, if the standings mean anything right now, Vanderbilt's in last place, right? They're 12-5. LSU's what's LSU, 10-7, something like that.
Vanderbilt's 10-7. LSU's 12-5 right now.
Oh yes, yeah. I wasn't ever very good at math. always when you go on the road in the SEC, it's more difficult than if you play at home. The numbers play it out. If you go look at last year, you know, like I think Arkansas was something silly, like, you know, 25-4 at home. You know, there's certain teams that just play way better at home. I think you'll see that with Vanderbilt. Connor Fennell is probably the guy they're going to face on Friday night. Remember last year, he was undefeated. He, in 7 starts, he went 6-0. Big, tall, lanky kid's got command of the fastball with some movement, can trick you with some off speed and hitters counts, that type of thing. He's their Friday night guy. Saturday, Sunday guys are also right-handed. So it's a predominantly right-handed staff. They got a couple bullpen arms they can throw at you left-handed, but that's a positive, you know, with the left-handed bats, including Jake Brown in LSU's lineup. Stephen Milam moves over to the left side, you know, so, but they're going to be good. I mean, you know, every week's going to be difficult. They've got, you know, Brody Johnson was the SEC tournament MVP last year. He's back. Brady Holcomb, 6'5", big old dude, hit 350 with 9 home runs. So they're swinging the bats a little better than they have in the past. Like I said earlier, kind of a product of who you're playing, but they're going to play well at home. So it's a tough thing for LSU. Clearly, you would have liked to go in with some momentum. I think it's the opposite right now. They're probably doubting themselves a little bit, but this is a good way to get back on track.
And what's your impressions of LSU's weekend rotation so far?
Oh, I mean, that's actually my least of my concerns is the arms. You know, Cason Evans is a stud. Cooper Moore has been great from Kansas, transfer over. You know, and then the local kid, William Schmidt's been great. So they're three guys that they start. I can't imagine that Jay's going to do anything with that rotation regardless of the outcome of the game because those three guys have been really good. And if one doesn't last very long, they can always bring in, you know, 6 talented bullpen arms, Maverick Rizzi, you know, some of these guys that are really good. So I think the concern is the defense. giving away free passes, which is walks, hit by pitches, and then when you throw the errors in there, I mean, they're second to last in errors. You start doing that. If you look at the SEC schedule when it's all said and done, the teams that are in last place are the ones that gave up the most walks, gave up the most hit by pitches, and committed the most errors. And LSU's doing that right now, and it's not a good sign. But I think that's the concern. The pitching staff for me is not a concern at all. I think they've attacked the zone well. Yeski's one of the best in the country, you know, not only with working with pitchers but adapting. So he'll get it figured out. Zach Cowan is a good example of somebody that needs to figure it out, but he might be a little upset that he wasn't drafted. There might be some mental stuff going on there. His changeup's his best pitch, and he can't get to it. I mean, they're hammering that fastball, you know, and he's got to feel comfortable. Like, he's got to hit spots, you know, because he doesn't throw 98, throws 91, 92. But he'll figure it out. There's no doubt to look at it that way, that if you just – but the problem with Zach is you got to keep throwing him out there. And if he keeps struggling, you got to keep throwing him out there until he figures it out, because he will. But there's a lot of trust involved in that, right? So I think overall I'm not worried about the pitching staff. It's the errors. And then, yeah, we got to get these bats going.
So overall, statistically, LSU is not very good right now, but you don't sound all that worried about this team turning it around in time to make an impact during a 10-week SEC season.
Well, it's not a, you know, I think that Jay said at one point, this is the most talented roster he's ever had. I think Moscona told me that, or I don't see that, especially in 2023 with the roster they had there. But it reminds me of the 2022 team. Remember, they weren't going to make the postseason, right?
Right.
And they end up getting in, and they were one win away from going to the Super Regional. So that's what you see. You know, you start looking back on those moments, and they're far, far away from – they win the SEC tournament having to win that first game that year. And they're far cry from that right now. They're too talented. And so, again, I just think – it feels like, without being in that clubhouse, it feels like they put a lot of pressure on themselves. And, of course, it gets worse the more losses you stack up, right? Because then you start losing and you're like, wow, you start doubting yourself, like I said, and you don't feel like the LSU that you should be. But if this is, in fact, the most talented roster that Jay Johnson has ever had, then they're going to figure it out.
Todd, when you had brief slumps when you were hitting at LSU, what did Skip say, or what did Skip do? You remember?
The greatest thing he did that I figured out later on in life is he didn't touch me. He didn't say anything to me other than being positive, and he didn't touch me. And because of that, I was able to just not focus on the things I should focus on, and not the fact that I'm, you know, 0 for 12 or whatever, you know, struggling, not hitting it like I feel like I should. And so I was just able to do my thing without any outside noise. And that's going back to what I was – you asked the question, what Jay can do, as little as possible, you know, and other than being a psychologist. Because you start going in the cage, like I said, start working mechanics this time of the year, it's going to work in reverse, and it's not going to be good. It's more mental at this point. Hey, maybe you should take the first pitch. Or, hey, you know, with the guy on second, nobody out, you know, they've got all the statistics now. You're going to get a 90% chance you're going to get an off-speed pitch, first pitch. You know, if it's around the zone – things, you know, you're a great hitter, you know, certain things like that. I mean, it wouldn't hurt if they get Chris Stanfield back at some point, but, you know, but one of the things of winning national championships, you got to stay healthy, you know, and Gavin Guidry was cruising along till he got the start last week. And then, you know, now he's walked a few guys. I know what he's trying to do is get guys in different roles and get them some work in, but ultimately you got to be in the role you feel like comfortable. And for me, like, I see Zach Cowan, you know, and Gavin Guidry as closers at the back end. So you don't got one talented kid, you got two. And now you start putting them in roles and keep them there regardless of what happens. And we roll from there. So I don't see the pitching staff, the rotation, the bullpen, and then the closers changing that much. I just think they probably need to be a little more patient and a little more selective at the plate. And selective means smarter, you know, like I just said. Not always the best thing to go after the first pitch.
All right, Todd Walker, thanks. Words of wisdom. Appreciate your time, buddy. We'll see you down the road, man.
Thank you.
All right, we'll be back with more Tiger Rag Radio right after this timeout.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to... Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with five available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious... With multiple engine options and impressive towing, while Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability,
nice.
Making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your super Chevy dealers today.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. My brother and I grow rice, soybeans, and raise crawfish on our farm in Evangeline Parish. For a fourth-generation farmer like myself, Louisiana Farm Bureau is as much a part of my life as checking traps or harvesting rice. Our organization is more than 145,000 members strong, and we've been around for more than 100 years. The Louisiana Farm Bureau spans generations, and we want you to join our family.
Visit lafarmbureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
We now return to Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
All right, we're back with Tiger Rag Radio. Another great guest, Todd Walker. You love these athletes who really can talk about the game, and that's Rudy Macklin and Todd Walker so far tonight. Baseball players, it's kind of a natural. They always know how to talk about the game, and they remember everything, but Rudy as well. And that's two great guests. And Todd with some great insight there on hitting. You know, Jay does, as an offensive coordinator, as you said, he works a lot with those guys. But at a certain point, you know, it's up to them, as you said. But we're going to have Reed Darcy on at 7:30. But let's return to our conversation we were having earlier about Matt McMahon and this emotional cry for Will Wade. One of the big misconceptions, I think, is that, you know, yeah, Will Wade got caught cheating a lot in a short period of time, and you know, half a dozen level one violations, and people are like, oh, well, you know, that's all okay now because, you know, they're paying players anyway. And that's only true to a certain extent, because a lot of the stuff Will was doing would be illegal now. I mean, there was some money laundering, and you know, he actually used his wife's bank account, you know, to funnel some money. And you know, the phone call said it all, just how brazen he could be. He, while on that phone call talking about Javonte Smart, he was bragging about how he bought previous players. I thought that was the most amazing thing about that FBI wiretap. But I'll say this, he was immature, he was reckless. I think he has grown up quite a bit, and he's proven himself at McNeese and you know, pretty much at North Carolina State. He's in a losing skid right now, but he's done a pretty good job there his first year, you know, probably end up in the tournament, and he's at a really good spot now. But, you know, I don't think it's automatically going to be the same if he does somehow come back to LSU.
No, you know, I did a lot of deep research on analytics on Wade and on McMahon, and they're two totally different types of coaches. You know, McMahon is more of a systems coach. He tries to develop players, run motion offenses.
Screens,
lots of, you know, very patient, right?
Half court.
Right.
But he runs too.
Yeah, but and defense. Even though the defense hasn't been good this year, traditionally he's a great defensive first coach.
Doesn't have good defensive players.
Now, that's what it comes down to. When you look at the analytics, Wade is always – won by having great players, like top caliber players. And when he was in the SEC at LSU, he had good players. It was pre-NIL, but he was still, as we know, paying for them. But it's interesting to me that one of the conditions is he wants a $15 million a year roster. Well, that you know, the top teams in the SEC this year, Florida, Alabama, I was going to say Kentucky, but they're spending a lot more than this, are averaging between $12 and $18 million expenses for their roster.
Florida is?
Arkansas,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Arkansas.
Arkansas is below 20?
I believe so.
Arkansas is about 18 on the dot.
Yeah.
So now, Kentucky's above 20.
So 15.
And they're not any good.
But 15 puts you in that area where you can get one or two, like, All-American type players.
Where do you think McMahon is right now? About eight?
I think they were at eight last year. And the year before that, they were at 1.5.
Yeah. So what do you so eight last year, where do you think they are this year?
I don't know. I don't. I know.
Think,
well, you got to combine.
Still under 10.
You got to combine the revenue share, which didn't exist before this year, right? So we know that they're getting 15% of the $20.5 million, right? According to what Verge told us.
But that really didn't go into this roster.
Yeah,
though.
It went into this year's roster.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So that's part of that $8 million. So that's into that. You know, Kentucky's spending 22, Arkansas spending 18, Florida's spending about 18.
And LSU's about 8 or 10.
Yeah. No, they're at 8.
Okay.
They're at 8 right for this year. Now, what they're going to be moving forward, that's why
So you're saying this roster that LSU has now was about $8 million.
The one that is playing in the SEC tournament against Kentucky tomorrow,
Gotcha.
Minus their top two revenue earners, which was Dedon Thomas and Jalen Reed, are worth $8 million.
And that's the bottom of the SEC.
Right. That's in the bottom third of the SEC now.
Right.
So you haven't supported the stabilization of the program with the type of roster development. Roster expenditure is the most important thing in the SEC right now. That's why Wade supposedly doesn't want to think about coming back to LSU unless they're going to commit, similar to what LSU had to do for Lane, to a certain amount of expenditure on the roster.
Well, Will Wade's not Lane.
No, I know. But the point is the similarities are they're demanding, hey, look, if you want to win, you got to give me $15 million.
Yeah.
Wade's saying that.
Yeah. Well, give McMahon that. Or if you do get a new coach, it doesn't have to be Wade. You know, there's other good coaches out there that would ask for that much. But we've covered all that, and we're going to switch gears over to women's basketball right after this break with the great Reed Darcy from the Baton Rouge Advocate. We'll be back with more Tiger Rag Radio right after this timeout.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with 5 available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious. With multiple engine options and impressive towing, while Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability.
Nice.
Making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your super Chevy dealers today.
Now more Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
Welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio. This is Glenn Gilbo with Todd Horn and Andre Champagne. Correct pronunciation. We're trying to get change his name to Andre Champagne. But we've had a great show tonight with Todd Walker and Rudy Macklin so far, and also Kendall Rogers early on. Baseball. If you want to listen to the show, go to your where you listen to your favorite podcasts, or go to YouTube, and also be on the Tiger Rag site shortly after the show. And right now we are joined by Baton Rouge Advocate women's basketball writer Reed Darcy. Reed, how are you this evening?
I'm doing great, guys, but I'm not sure how I feel about going after a couple of LSU legends there.
You know, you should feel fine because you're becoming a legend yourself.
You enjoying a little time off in between the SEC tournament and the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, it's a nice little break. It doesn't slow down completely, but it does slow down a little bit. And I've kind of taken the time here, I think, to look up some hotels and some restaurants in Sacramento, because I really feel like that's where I'll be headed in a couple of weeks.
Oh, and why is that?
Well, I think when you look at it, you know, a couple things changed through the weekend of the conference tournaments. One is that Vanderbilt lost to Ole Miss, and the other thing is that LSU beat Oklahoma and beat them pretty badly. So I think those two things kind of pushed LSU up in the rankings, at least according to the selection committee, which means that they're probably going to get paired with UCLA now, who's probably going to be the number two overall seed. If you remember the last time the selection committee offered that glimpse into the top 16 seeds, they really did it. They really were careful to avoid pairing SEC teams with each other. So because Texas and South Carolina have those last two number one seeds locked up, I'd expect LSU, because they're presumably higher than Vanderbilt now, to get paired with that number two overall team, which it really looks like is going to be UCLA.
Reed, whether it's UCLA or UConn or South Carolina or Texas that LSU has to face in the tournament, and like you said, it'll probably be UCLA, and I believe you, can they win any of those games if they are fighting amongst themselves like Joyner and Fulwiley? Starkey is pushing Williams out of the huddle, and they're not following directions in clutch from the coach. Can they put all that pull? Is there a problem? Are things rotten in Denmark, or is that just emotion in the heat of a game, and they just need to learn from it?
I think the Fulwiley Joyner thing, and then this, you know, Bob Starkey, Michaela Williams thing. You know, it was probably just a sign of frustration, you know, more than anything. And I think when you get into those competitive environments in a hostile, you know, against a hostile crowd and a really good team, and things, you know, aren't going as well as you'd hope them to do, I think things like that can happen in basketball. So I personally did not look too much into either of those incidents. But that being said, I think LSU overall needs to be better at just executing its half-court offense. I think that's probably number one, because there's a couple instances here, you know, when you think back to other South Carolina losses and other losses that LSU has had in the season. They have not been able to score in the half-court nearly as effectively as they need to. You know, they can't be as reliant on their transition offense as they are, because they're going to run into so many good teams who can score the ball, and no matter how LSU really defends them. So if LSU has to take the ball out of the net as often as they did in the second half of the game against South Carolina, then they might run into some troubles, and they might have some frustrating little brushes, I suppose, going toward timeouts, toward the sideline. So, you know, at the end of the day, that's kind of basketball, but it's kind of a symptom of frustration that they have to be feeling after, you know, losing to South Carolina so many times.
Hey, Reed, this is Andre. Just kind of sticking with that South Carolina loss, it seemed like LSU had played some of their best basketball in the first half, but then, like we've seen many times this year, and I think all five of their losses, just a breakdown in the second half. Just what have you seen, I guess, from these trends and I guess from those losses that are just not allowing LSU to kind of come through in the clutch?
Yeah, South Carolina has done a really good job of executing its half-court offense late in games. It's really done a good job of making sure that it's getting good looks in the half-court, getting high-percentage looks in the half-court. And what's happened as a result of that, they're scoring buckets, and those buckets have taken away transition opportunities from LSU. And that's really when LSU is at its best, at its most dangerous, when they can run in transition. And, you know, if you look in the second half of the game against South Carolina on Saturday, they were either not defending well enough, giving up open shots, or the times when they did force a miss, they weren't grabbing enough rebounds. South Carolina, I believe, had 9 offensive rebounds just in the second half of that game, and they turned those rebounds into about 14 second chance points. So that's not going to cut it. You know, for a team like LSU that is so dangerous in transition, when they can get out and run, they need to defend and rebound, and then they need to do it against some of the top teams in the country, probably UCLA in the Elite Eight, if they want to get back to the Final Four. It's going to start with that, because it's the key to unlocking that transition offense that's been so dangerous for them.
Yeah, and you make a good point, because, you know, a lot of it had to deal with personnel issues in the second, not issues, but personnel decisions in the second half of that South Carolina game. With LSU, if they do match up against a UCLA, how big do you think a Kate Koval becomes just for this team, you know, having to defend a Lauren Betts just with that matchup? And I guess we haven't really seen Kate much in the past few weeks, but it seems like she has been kind of trending in the right direction. What have you seen?
Sure, yeah. She's definitely trending in the right direction. I think she's playing She's played some good basketball in spurts lately. I think back to Mississippi State. She was awesome in that game. It's probably the best defensive game she's played all year. Looking ahead, looking too far ahead, you know, admittedly to that matchup with UCLA that they're probably going to run into. Lauren Betts is 6'7", and then so they need their tallest player, Kate Koval, who's 6'5", to match up with her. Amaya Joyner has been a good defender and a good rebounder at times, but she's 6'2", and it's going to be asking quite a lot of her to tussle with Lauren Betts down low. Not too many players across the country can, but I think Kate Koval has shown that she has the potential to do that. Certainly, you know, she's gotten more comfortable on the defensive end of the floor throughout the season, and obviously she has the size, strength, and skill to really defend and rebound around the rim well. So she's going to be key. But you know, I think back to I look at UCLA, and I think that, you know, if you look at their guards, you know, they kind of like to play the smaller lineups. You know, they have a lot of shooters, and so they don't exactly have two strong post players. They kind of space it out a little bit. And so that might actually kind of play into LSU's hands a little bit, because that gives them an opportunity to put all four of their guards on the floor at the same time. Jada Richard, Malaysia Fulali, and then Faje and Michaela. You know, I think if they ran into a bigger team like maybe UConn, they wouldn't have that opportunity. But because, say they do run into UCLA, I think they can go small in that matchup, which is a positive for them, because those small lineups are really when they're at their best, when they have all four of those guards on the floor.
Yeah, and just wrapping up here, we have about a minute. Just quickly tell me, Gary Reedus was hired as the Rutgers head coach on Monday. You've been covering this team for a while now. Just how much of a loss is this for Mulkey and her staff?
Yeah, pretty big loss. Coach G, as they call them, he's a really great recruiter, and that's really where his strength is as a coach. He helped LSU sign two number one freshman classes in 4 years. This freshman class that LSU has right now has been really, really good. You know, I think it's met expectations, if not surpassed them. And if they can keep those players out of the transfer portal, it's going to be the backbone of their program for the next 2 or 3 years. So it is a big loss. And I think that Kim Mulkey is going to have to find another coach who is a good recruiter so they can find someone who can help her sell the LSU brand, sell her system, sell the promise of them competing for national championships and going on deep runs through the tournament. Because Reedus did a pretty good job of you know, connecting with the players and the people around them and selling LSU for them and giving Kim Mulkey, helping her get some talented rosters that can compete for titles.
Real quick, Reed, is he going to return and finish the season at LSU, or do you think he stays at Rutgers?
I don't know for sure yet, but I would imagine that he can spend a couple weeks here doing double duty. You know, if you think about it, the transfer portal doesn't open until after the national title game this year, so that helps coaches in his position. They don't necessarily have to have that crunch that other coaches have had in the past where they're trying to coach in the tournament and build out their roster for next year.
All right, Reed, we'll get back to work on your Sacramento entertainment. I'm sure there's – actually, I've covered an NCAA tournament in Sacramento. It's a pretty cool town. Nice capital. Cool downtown. So have a good time out in Sacramento if LSU goes out there. And thanks for joining us, and we will be back with more Tiger Rag Radio right after this.
Tiger Rag Radio is back. Live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
Welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio. Thanks to Reed Darcy for joining us. And we're going to update you right now on the LSU baseball game against Creighton going on out at Alex Box. What's the score, Todd?
So we're in the top of the third with one out. So Creighton's batting. They're up 2-1, bases loaded. Right now, and LSU's on their third pitcher of the game.
Creighton is up 2-1.
Bases loaded.
With the bases loaded.
About to be the fourth pitcher of the night.
And who has pitched so far for the Tigers?
Reagan Ricken started, and then Dax Daith went in relief, did not even record an out. And now Ethan Plogg has gotten himself into quite the trouble here.
So he's still in there?
He's getting pulled as we speak.
Oh, okay. All right.
Bases loaded, one out.
Well,
LSU's got three hits so far tonight.
Gosh,
one air.
Wow, they got to get over.
They
that
have stranded. Now. They have also stranded many, many times already.
Five.
And, well, at least they got some traffic on the bases. That's
and Maverick Rizzi is coming in.
Oh, okay.
So not ideal because these are Ethan Plogg and Maverick Rizzi are both guys you would think they were going to try and save at least for SEC play here, but
well, they're not going to. You know, they're saving Gavin Guidry for sure, I would think. But it's still 3 days away. Turning back to women's basketball, Andre, where do you see the Tigers going in the NCAA tournament? Which regional?
I would agree with Reed. I think they're going to go to Sacramento strictly for the sole fact that Ole Miss went one and done.
But don't they have the first two games at home, though?
They do. They do.
Okay, so if they win those two games, right, you think they're going to go to Sacramento as well?
That is true, yeah. Yep. Because Ole Miss, and actually, I really do believe that this UCLA, I mean, to be the best, you're going to have to beat the best. That's what they always say. But, you know, like Mulkey said, when they won the national championship in 22.
They didn't beat the best that year.
No, but you have to, you know, but you have to get,
well, of course, you could say they did.
You know, you have to get a little bit of luck. And so for them to get a little bit of luck is, I think, is going to be needed. And, you know, I don't think that UCLA matchup is really their friend, especially after matching up against them the last 2 years, and especially in a year where they really just they don't have the bigs that they usually do down low. Lauren Betts is really, really dominant. And I think there is a strong possibility with women's basketball this year, with it being so heavily, I guess, talented, especially from the SEC. Right now their prediction is, I think they have Kentucky in the same bracket as them. That's a team that really could knock off UCLA in my eyes.
And where is the women's Final Four?
It's in Phoenix this year.
It's in Phoenix, okay. So if the women get to Phoenix, Todd and I will be covering the team there, Andre. We appreciate your coverage so far, but you're not traveling.
Right. Business is business, I guess.
Who would do your radio reports if you were in Phoenix? So that's what
that's why
said. I don't know, guys. I think we can make it work.
Well, I think it's going to be interesting because, you know, LSU has been close all year, you know, and sometimes things just kind of flip in the NCAA tournament. It's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, like I said, this year I expect a lot more parity than we've seen in the past couple of years. I don't know about you, Todd, but I mean, that the SEC is no joke this year. It really isn't. And you've seen that all year. I mean, Texas, who just won the SEC, got creamed by Vanderbilt a couple weeks ago. And then, you know, Vanderbilt just got creamed by Ole Miss, who, you know, it's just everybody's beating up on each other.
Wouldn't it be cool if somebody else beat South Carolina again? And then LSU beat that team and won the championship,
national championship
without having to beat South Carolina. That would be cool.
It would be funny if that happened, and I wouldn't rule it out.
But, you know, and not to contradict what you just said, Andre, because I think there's a lot of truth in that, and you do see the Ole Misses beating the Vanderbilts, and there have been some other upsets, especially in the SEC during the course of the year. But I think South Carolina, UConn, UCLA, Texas, LSU, that's the cream of the crop.
It is. It is.
And the cream of the crop usually rises to the top. So.
Wow, that rhymes.
Yeah, I know.
Well, not only that, but you just saw number 2 UCLA beat number 9 Iowa in the Big Ten championship by 50 points. I mean, that is there is a big difference in those teams. But I do think the SEC is a lot better than the Iowas and the Michigans out there. So. That could be me being biased.
Iowa lost by 50 points?
50 points in the conference championship game.
God, was Caitlin at the game?
No.
Jeez, fit boy. They
could have used her.
They miss her, man. All right, well, you can tell we're out of guests right now. We're just kind of winging it here. But we got one more segment. We're going to take one more break. We'll be back with more Tiger Rag Radio right after this.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with 5 available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious with multiple engine options and impressive towing. While Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability.
Nice.
Making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your super Chevy dealers today.
Tiger Rag Radio is back on the air, live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
Hello, welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio. This is Glenn Gilbo with Todd Horn and Andre Champagne. Bad news from Alex Box in the top of the third, or going into the bottom of the third, Creighton 4, LSU 1. Still early, though. Still early in the season, though, too. But not good news from Alex Box.
They're not the only ones losing. Vanderbilt is also losing to Indiana State, 6-3.
Does Larry Bird play for Indiana State?
He did play for Indiana State.
We are at the Super Chevy Dealer Studio right now. I want to thank our guests, Kendall Rogers from D1 Baseball, Rudy Macklin, the great forward for LSU on the 1980-81 Final Four team, the greatest team in LSU basketball history, Todd Walker on the 1993 National Championship team, and Baton Rouge Advocate women's basketball writer Reed Darcy. You can listen to tonight's show in full at your
Kindle.
Favorite place to I mentioned Kindle.
I didn't hear. Sorry.
Okay. Well, why don't you listen, Pat?
I should.
Listen to your favorite, where you listen to your favorite podcast, or you can get it on the Tiger Rag website or YouTube. Should be up shortly after the show. The LSU men's basketball team plays at 11:30 a.m. tomorrow against Kentucky to kick off the SEC men's basketball tournament in Nashville. And Tiger Rag will have coverage of that as soon as the game ends. And let's see. We will also be covering the baseball series at Vanderbilt this weekend. Not in person, but we'll be covering that going in. And we'll have the report on the Creighton game tonight. And we're wrapping up the show. Anything else, guys?
Well, you know, every day on TigerRag.com, there's always 6 to 8. At least fresh, new, original content articles that.
Yes. And get your money issue around Baton Rouge right now, the Tiger Rag newsstands for free. Great issue. One of our best issues, I think. Great job by Mr. Todd Horn, financial wizard. Probably might get you a job at LSU, man.
I don't think that's something.
They need some help over there crunching the numbers, man.
I believe it or not, I'm not looking for a job.
And, Andre, what other scores do you have?
Let's see. I had scores. Coastal Carolina, number 16, is putting number 12, Wake Forest, on upset alert, 10-4. Tulane, in-state Tulane, is beating number 3, Mississippi State, 4-2 right now. Ole Miss is knotted with number 7, Southern Miss, 1-1. And that is about it. For now.
And LSU trails Creighton in the first ever game with Creighton, 4-1 at Alex Box Stadium. They'll be at Vanderbilt this weekend. Jay Johnson has a press conference tomorrow to set up the SEC opening weekend series. And if LSU loses tonight, it's not going to be a fun press conference, man.
There might just be one, Jay, which would be tonight.
Jay is, yeah, that's right. Jay's getting tired of those press conferences, I can tell. But all right, well, that was a good show. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We will be back next week, same time, same bat channel, on Tiger Rag Radio. Have a good evening.
Tiger Rag is everywhere. Online at TigerRag.com. Like us on Facebook at Facebook.com/TigerRag Magazine. Or follow us on Twitter at Tiger_Rag.